to really understand the proposals, but hopefully we'll let you get through the proposal. I was the biggest offender on that yesterday, so I'll do my best to let you get through the proposal. Senator Pogue-Miller's nodding. Yes, we're in agreement, Senator Pogue-Miller. So, Mr. Mossman, would you talk today about the corporate income tax? Will you talk about the property taxes and any other of the special taxes that are in the governor's proposal?
Absolutely. Madam Chair and members, good morning. I am glad that my lights were working on the way into the Capitol this morning. Again, Matt Mossman, Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy with the Department of Revenue. As we go along today, we'll be working again we'll probably be starting up on page 10, I think, is where we left off of the budget pages. And I will be having some staff as well, some colleagues, support staff from the department come up and join me, experts, as we move along, just to make sure the provisions, that there's a full understanding of the provisions that are in the governor's recommendations here. Starting off, Madam Chair and members, on page 10, the governor does recommend repealing the current law subtraction for foreign royalties and FOC provisions from current law. The thinking here is that those...
Mr. Mossman, technical interruption. I think we're on page 13 and not 10. Is that right?
Okay. If you're 13, talking about- Madam Chair. 13.
Thank you.
This recommendation is really reflective of not only the overall budget challenge that the state faces in terms of the $6.2 billion deficit and the sorting out of the governor's priorities with regard to the choices that are available on both the revenue and the spending side. This provision reflects an elimination of preferences that are in current law for FOC provisions, for FOCs, and for royalty subtractions. The recognition that the state is moving to full single factor sales apportionment by 2014 is thought to really have addressed or be addressing many of the tax disadvantages in the business climate that gave rise to these provisions initially. And that is largely the basis for the recommendation here. In addition, and I can go through more detail on the budget pages if you'd like, Madam Chair, what we have learned as well at the department in looking through these tax preferences, that approximately 25% of the benefit in dollar value for these two provisions accrues to businesses in Minnesota, while about 75% of the subtraction of the benefit of these provisions accrues to businesses and corporations outside of Minnesota. On page 15, Madam Chair and members, the governor recommends amending statutes to require that all sales to the state of a unitary business be included in the sales factor for the state. The recommendation here reflects largely the increasing likelihood and circumstances where we're finding that corporations, as states have moved to single factor sales, where businesses have taken their sales, attempted to restructure around the move to single factor sales for states, place all of their sales in a corporation within the unitary family that's in a state, so they put all of their sales in one state, and then claim that there would not have nexus to states through sales into Minnesota. This provision would make some adjustments to our statutes to ensure that corporate tax can be collected when there's a unitary business, when that corporation is part of the unitary family.
Senator Limmer has a question.
Thank you, Limmer. Mr. Mossman. Do you know how many other states have this type of treatment on FOCs?
Mr.
Madam
Mossman?
Chair, Senator Limmer, I don't. I am going to Why don't I have Steve Krinkle come up and join me for these provisions? And we may not know the answer to the question right now, but we can certainly find out if we don't, Senator Limerick.
My name is Stephen Krinkle. I'm with the Department of Revenue.
Thank you.
The question I had is, do you know how many other states have FOC treatment like Minnesota currently has?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not sure of the exact number. The last I knew, I believe it was in the number around 8 or 10. I can get the exact number, but it is a relative minority of states that have similar provisions.
Question: the reason why I bring that question up is a question of competition. Do we have a by keeping this tax treatment, are we creating a competitive advantage over other states, or are we not?
Mr. Krinkle.
Madam Chair, Senator, the question is what you mean by a competitive advantage, because the tax treatment, as the Assistant Commissioner said, benefits corporations primarily without the state of Minnesota. So there is a lower tax rate for corporations that can – lower effective tax rate for corporations that can take advantage of these preferences, but it doesn't per se – benefit economic activity within the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and Senator Loomer, I think, and just these two provisions are, I think, as you're recognizing, related in terms that they both are reflective of, you know, as the state is moving to 100% sales apportionment, how that is taken into account from a tax policy standpoint, from an economic development standpoint. The recommendations here are that's an important part of the recommendations here, recognizing that as corporations, wherever they be headquartered, wherever they be placed, are really only going to be taxed in Minnesota under the corporate tax to the extent that they have sales in Minnesota. So if they're in effect benefiting or participating in the Minnesota marketplace from their sales to Minnesota, that's what their tax will be based on. If they're not, they won't. And so 100% apportionment really has a way of leveling the playing field relative to the level playing field that was intended with some of these provisions when they were initially enacted.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mossman, I don't want to tie up the early part of our time today, but the question I may have is if I was a corporation that was involved in this type of activity and the state repealed this particular tax treatment, provided that there's at least 10 other states that may be having this opportunity, that corporate president may decide to move. If it was to his financial advantage, number one. And number two, if that were the case, how many jobs do you know that are represented in companies that do business in this regard? How many jobs or employment might be triggered by that?
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, what I'm hearing is we can certainly go back and find out in terms of the number of states or what other states have like proposal or like provisions with regard to FOCs and royalty subtraction.
And the employment numbers?
Not sure that we'll be able to have the employment numbers. We don't, in terms of that kind of modeling capacity on any of these provisions. That is, I know that we can get the information on the other states. I think that the impact on the employment and economic impact will be more of a conversation piece.
Senator Pogemiller, and then Senator
Howell. My memory is fading a little, but I believe I'm the author of all three of these provisions. And the basic argument, as I understand it, I don't know this answer, I'm just, the argument appears to be that the phase-in of the single sales is eliminating the need for the other two. I don't personally know if that's true. I'm just saying that's the argument.
Senator Howell?
I was just wondering, Madam Chair, if you could speak to how this either is puts us in conformity with the federal statute or federal laws concerning this, and just explain that.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, that's a good question. You know, I think one way to think about is the subtraction, at least, and Mr. Krinkle will be able to help me out, but if you kind of think of the corporate tax in the same way as the individual income tax, federal taxable income for corporate taxes is the starting point for the for Minnesota tax under the corporate tax provisions. And, for example, the royalty subtraction is an adjustment to federal taxable income from that standpoint. So from the standpoint of, if that is helping answer your question, that would this so a corporation that is filing corporate taxes in Minnesota would start with federal taxable income. Royalties would be included in that income for federal tax purposes. It would then be a subtraction on the Minnesota return in terms of determining their allocation and their taxation in Minnesota.
Okay. Mr. Mossman, when we make tax policy changes, there's always a balance. And the other side of this argument is that we've got multinational corporations headquartered here in Minnesota with extensive research and development operations. And when they are operating overseas and earn income overseas, they have to repatriate that income here in Minnesota if they want to invest in Minnesota, and this gives them a disincentive to do it. If you close this opportunity for them to do that with some tax recognition, that they could get better treatment elsewhere. And so when they have licenses overseas and patents and trademarks and they earn money overseas, they want to bring that back for research and development and product development, marketing, and things like that, and this will make Minnesota anti-competitive. I just want to make sure that we hear in this committee not just the pros but also the cons of that, and I think that will impact huge employers in the state of Minnesota, some of the very biggest, and I think we should be acknowledging that. Maybe that's a policy choice of the governor, but I think we should be looking at that policy decision here in the tax committee. Mr. Mossman?
I think, Madam Chair, you raise a very good point, and I think that the conversation will certainly be ongoing with these provisions. I've actually learned a lot about the provisions in the last few weeks myself, and what I think is kind of will become part of the conversation as well is that it's interesting on this provision these tax preferences, for example, that if you are a pharmaceutical company that had R&D that was done in New Jersey, was never really done in Minnesota at all, but you have sales to Minnesota, you would still be benefiting, for example, from this royalties subtraction, even though none of that research and development activity ever occurred here in Minnesota. And that, I think, kind of leads back to the understanding that what we're seeing is that about 75% of the dollar value, for example, of the subtraction actually goes to businesses that are outside of Minnesota who have sales in Minnesota, so they're subject to the tax. So I think there's, is this the most efficient way to direct benefits to Minnesota-based businesses? Minnesota economic development is another part of the question.
Well, Mr. Mossman, that does, though, create a hardship for those 25% of Minnesota businesses that are trying to bring that income back in to reinvest in Minnesota or to hire folks here in Minnesota. It makes it that much harder, does it not?
Madam Chair, one thing is that, as I understand what is being proposed in the budget document, there's the other side of the corporate franchise tax equation. Other than the income side, the preference affects the income side. But it's my understanding that the proposals would include these sales overseas that lead to the royalties in the sales factor, so it would decrease the amount of sales within Minnesota. There's an up and down. One side you're taking away a preference, which, as the assistant commissioner said, may be an inefficient method of providing a benefit to a corporation. The other side is perhaps more accurately measuring the amount of business that's done within the state of Minnesota by including these royalties in the sales factor as we go to a single factor sales formula. So there's two sides to the equation.
Usually true. Yeah. we will want to see how it plays out in terms of how do you draft this into language and what would the actual application be. And we'll be very interested to hear more about this.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. Madam Chair and members, I think that brings us to page 16. The governor proposes repealing the current law exemption for insurance companies from the corporate franchise tax. The proposal here is expected to increase general fund revenues by $17 million in fiscal 12 and 13. Under current law, these corporations that conduct business in Minnesota, their income is exempt from the corporate tax. They do pay the insurance premiums tax. Corporations were, I believe, up until around 2002, subject to the corporate income tax. There are just two things to note in this proposal. There would be a credit for the premiums paid by the insurance companies, and in order to address the retaliatory laws that exist in various states across the country, there would also be an anti-retaliatory provision in this proposal such that insurance companies located in states that have retaliatory provisions would be exempt from this tax in order to keep the playing field level for corporations.
Senator Michelle.
Mr. Mossman, is there any state that doesn't have a retaliatory provision for these kind of taxes? I'm recalling that most, if not all, do.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle, if Mr. Krinkle, I might have to get back to you on that. I'm not sure we have an answer, but we can definitely get back to you on what the status is. And that may have changed since the last time this conversation happened as well. So we'll get that information.
Madam Chair, I believe that all states except six have retaliatory provisions presently. I don't know if I've got the six in front of me right now, but it's a very small number that don't have retaliatory provisions.
If you would just let us know when you have that information, that'd be good. Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and members, on page 17, the governor proposes that the minimum fees for corporations that are currently in law be indexed both in terms of the brackets and the annual fee amount. You will see at the this applies to businesses of all structures, corporations, C corporations, et cetera. On the bottom of page 7, there is, bottom of page 17, pardon me, there is a schedule of the existing current law brackets and the proposed brackets. You can see that under current law, a business of less than 500,000, the bracket schedule is based on, first of all, the sum of a business's property, payroll, and sales in a year. That's what determines what bracket they fall into, and their minimum annual fee that is zero currently for a business that has total property, payroll, and sales of under $500,000 a year. And then you can see the brackets moving forward from there. A business between 500 and a million would have an annual fee of $100, et cetera, on up to businesses that have 20 million or more in annual property, payroll, and sales would have an annual fee of $5,000. On the right, then, is a table that shows the proposed new brackets. The lower bracket, for example, if indexed from 1990 forward, would have a fee of zero going up to $870,000 of total property, payroll, and sales. The second bracket, 870 to 1.7. Million dollars, and the top bracket would start at $34,750,000 with a fee change from $5,000 to $8,690. We've done some just analysis that we've been able to complete since the budget recommendation was put forward here by the governor. Mr. Chair and members, we believe that under this change, some businesses would pay a lower fee as a result of this change, and some would pay a higher fee. About 18,000 businesses that currently pay a fee would actually drop to having a zero fee under this, so they're currently paying a fee and they would no longer pay a fee. In total, about 46,000 businesses would pay less of an annual fee under this proposal, and 39,000 would pay more. most of the additional revenue that you see in the budget page here of $16 million or more would come from corporations that are at the higher property payroll and sales levels here.
Any questions? Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, would it make more sense to, you know, these brackets, it looked like you've got quite a range there. Any thought to actually just put in like a, you know, a 0.00 percentage on there so it's a sliding scale?
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howell, I don't know that that, I don't think that that proposal has been considered, making it more like a rate. We could certainly take a look at that, you know, as the conversation goes forward. I'm not sure how that would impact businesses differently. I know that some businesses clearly don't pay a fee at all under this proposal and having a rate. I'm not sure without some analysis how it would necessarily affect, but it would probably affect different businesses differently in the category, so I think that would have to be taken into account.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, it just appears here that, you know, with the bracketing that, you know, you might have an incentive to I guess it's either minimum amounts, but I'm just thinking that I'd like to see a chart to see how this would come out to the same amount of dollars with an actual percentage, and I'm sure it would be a very, you know, less than a whatever percent, but it would be a very minimal percent. I'd like to see what that would be, if we could.
Any other questions? Mr. Mossman, I had a question, and maybe you may not be aware of the history on this, but I was wondering, isn't it kind of, I see on the under the rationale paragraph, the minimum fee was established to assess a minimum tax on the opportunity to do business in Minnesota. I thought that was kind of done when you filed your corporation, or that you paid for a license fee. That gave you the opportunity to do business in Minnesota. Now we've made it part of tax policy as an additional cost, or maybe not now, but it has been a part of Minnesota history to now pay a tax for just the sheer opportunity to do business. I'm just wondering, do you have a knowledge of how this came about?
Mr. Chair, perhaps the better word choice could have been put there. I don't know the entire history of the proposal. I suspect that it might have arose out of conversations if there were some companies who under the other tax structures had years where they weren't, where they had no tax liability and didn't have tax, that there would be a minimum. I can learn more about the history on that and get back to you. I'm not sure what exactly the history was.
Mr. Mossman, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because usually we tax the production of a business. Mm-hmm. And if, let's say, you're starting up a business and you have a lot of investment going forward into the startup costs, you may not have a profit for a few years, and yet we still, the state is still demanding a tax. Somehow it just seems counterintuitive to attract businesses and startups in Minnesota. Maybe with this change it may reflect a little more sensitivity toward the startups, but nevertheless, it just seems that it's unusual that we're taxing for the opportunity to do business in the state. You can proceed, Mr. Musk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to turn to you. Mr. Chair and members, we're on to page 18 then, and these for the next few recommendations here, we have a couple recommendations that arose out of, some tax policy conversations at the department in terms of seeing how some of the taxes and business and the community was being affected, that the governor agreed to recommend. I'm actually going to have Mr. Krinkle walk through pages 18 through 20, just in terms of giving you an understanding of these provisions here.
Mr. Krinkle.
Mr. Chair, the first provision is regarding foreign partnership income. Presently, Minnesota statutes, as been alluded to, start at federal taxable income as the starting point for determining what Minnesota income subject to tax is. And also we have enacted, the legislature has enacted provisions on partnerships that are virtually identical, except for some language on minimum fee, to the federal provisions. But there is a court case that determined that a certain income from foreign partnerships was not to be included, even though it was included in federal taxable income. This leads to a conflict between the court cases decided and provisions of law that were not really addressed in that court case. And this is simply a conformity issue in the large sense to get us back to the federal starting point for taxable income of partnerships, including foreign partnerships that would be included as income of a domestic corporation under the federal code. So there are provisions in the statute right now, but they need clarification to simply bring us back into conformity. The next provision on page, I guess it's my page 18, is another conformity provision on REIT dividends. Real estate investment trusts act as sort of like a mutual fund for real estate investments.
Excuse me, Mr. Krinkle. Members, we're on page 19 in the handouts 19, that we
I'm
have.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. The income of a real estate investment trust is not taxed at the trust level if it's distributed. The federal provisions exclude these dividends received by a corporation from a real estate investment trust from the dividend received deduction. This provision would simply bring Minnesota law into conformity with federal law on the dividends received from a real estate investment trust by a corporation. Next provision, page 20, is the research, and really it's an increased researching credit, if you want to be technical about it, but everybody calls it the R&D credit. What happened is, for federal, we are pretty much in conformity with the federal increasing research credit regarding what qualifies as a qualified expenditure and also what corporations qualify. You've got to have a base period amount under federal law. This base period amount is from determined by research and development spending in the period from 1984 to 1988. Certain corporations, and now the research and development credit has been expanded to other entities other than corporations, don't have their base period records. This provision would permit those persons to take an increasing research credit, even if they don't have their records that would be required under federal law. The 16% that's referred to is the base year percentage that is the maximum percentage that's permitted under federal law. It would then permit this credit for all taxpayers who have increasing research expenditures. It would be the least advantageous position because they don't have the records to substantiate what their base period amount was. And then going to page 21, adoption of an economic substance test. The federal government and every state that I've been able to find requires that a transaction have some reality in the real world other than as a tax transaction to be given any substance as affecting your tax the state of Minnesota lost a case, the Department of Revenue, HMN Financial, that said that without explicit statutory authority, that would rule, although it's generally followed, would not be followed in Minnesota. There are provisions in the governor's proposals that would, in fact, require an economic transaction to have some economic reality other than for tax purposes to be recognized for tax purposes.
Madam Chair and members, before we move on to the federal conformity provisions, the next couple pages, to Senator Michelle's question earlier on insurance companies, the information that I was just able to get from our research staff, the other states that do not have retaliatory provisions right now where, in effect, we would end up taxing insurance companies sold in the state from those companies would be Hawaii, Massachusetts, New York, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. So I think that's five that don't have provisions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moss.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, the federal conformity provisions on page 22 and 23, I'm not sure how much time we need to necessarily spend on those. Those are essentially the same provisions, the same story as the federal conformity pages and provisions that we went over for the individual income tax to the extent that they affect both the individual income tax and the corporate tax or only the corporate tax. These are the recommendations that the governor is making with regard to federal conformity.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mossman, maybe I'm a little slow here, but tell me, what's the benefit of why would we want to conform with IRS code as a state? It's a basic premise that I keep hearing in the last three or four pages, but no one has really told me why you need to conform with IRS code.
Mr. Mossman, Senator Limmer, are you looking for a discussion of theory of conformity?
Well, I'm trying to. It's the basis of these particular tax treatments, and I'm just wondering. I haven't gotten the premise down of why does a state need to do that?
Mr. Mossman, do you want to take a swing at that one?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Limmer. let me get my. The gavel moved back and forth a little bit, my confusion. I will say this. I'm not certainly going to be able to get into the theory. I believe it was back in the early 80s when Minnesota decided to essentially move towards the presumption that we would start for both of the corporate tax and the individual income tax to federal taxable income as the starting point. I suspect that there are quite a number of issues involved in that with regard to making it more transparent, easier for taxpayers who are already completing their federal tax forms to be able to rely on that sort of bookkeeping and other all of the work that would go into completing and complying with their federal tax responsibilities to have that be the starting point and to hew fairly closely to that from, you know, it is really, I think, a kind of a theoretical question and not really theoretical, but it's a more significant tax policy choice. The answer to your question, I think, is, in short, we could start at a different place, and I don't know what states I'll do. I mean, we could have a different basis for starting our determination of tax in Minnesota for individual income or corporate tax. It probably is a much longer discussion with much more detail and ramifications than I'd be able to bring to you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
In looking over this tax policy, is it the goal of the administration to adopt all IRS code conformity and apply it to Minnesota?
Mr. Mossman.
I think Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, to kind of tail off the kind of big picture comments that I was just making, I think in general, I think Minnesota has fairly consistently over time, since having made that kind of choice to start as federal taxable income tried to maintain that by largely conforming to those federal provisions when they have come up. We have not always fully conformed to those provisions. We are not fully conforming to some provisions, for example, right now, where we have certain provisions where taxpayers make add-backs on their income or corporate tax forms for provisions that we haven't complied to. I think recently those have largely been choices that have been made within the context of difficult budget situations and the cost of conforming for the state. There are probably circumstances where a federal preference might be given where state tax choices are just not to make that preference extended in Minnesota, but generally I think where the department is recommending to the governor and where the governor has moved has been to conform to as much as he feels from a tax policy standpoint, and I think, again, key, a budget standpoint that he can conform to.
Senator Limmer, we have had at least one hearing on the conformities already, and we've passed the 2010 conformities out of the committee. And I'm not sure if you were here the day that we talked about the conformities and the costs for 2011 and 12, which are extensive. But for purposes of today's hearing, I would just point out what we learned yesterday about the governor's proposal on conformities, is that there are certain selected items that he does suggest we conform to, but there were some big ones, including the Bush tax cuts, the marriage penalty, and the standard deduction, the additional one, and the 179 expensing, and some of the ones that were contained in the Bush tax cuts. I remember the fiscal note being about $280 million, which is a significant price tag, but something we will certainly talk about. There is a bill pending with those 2011 and 2012 conformity provisions that will come before this committee for a hearing.
Madam Chair, one area of federal law that Minnesota doesn't reflect the same tax treatment, and that would be capital gain treatment. And I don't know if this proposal actually has us or urging us to adopt federal treatment under capital gain treatment. And we don't have capital gain treatment in Minnesota, which I think is rather sad for corporations that want to maybe sell huge assets that have created a profit for themselves. And we don't have it. And I was just wondering if in this federal conformity, if the administration is going to propose or make a proposal that we adopt a similar tax treatment on capital gains.
Senator, Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, there are not any proposals in the governor's recommendations related to capital gains treatment.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Okay, Mr. Mossman, do you want to move on to the sales and use tax proposal? And I'll just let you know, Mr. Mossman, we are going to have a hearing on this proposal as a standalone proposal, and it's a pretty complicated issue. And so I would say, let's just give it a real quick one and then move on, because we will have a full hearing on this issue, members.
Sure. Okay, Madam Chair and members, then I'll give a quick roll through page 24 with that understanding, and then I'm going to ask Susan Barry and Margaret Reisdorf of our staff to come up also if there are some technical questions on the sales tax provisions. The governor does propose amending statutes for sales tax nexus to create a rebuttal presumption that a retailer maintains a place of business in the state if they enter into an agreement with a solicitor, which is already defined in statute, and that definition would be adjusted. If they enter into an agreement for referrals of customers for a fee, so there's a compensation and transaction involved, and the retailer's gross receipts are over $10,000 for a 12-month period, that would constitute nexus and require the collection of sales and use tax for sales to Minnesota.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I'll also walk through 25, and then I'll ask Ms. Barry to pick up and run through some of the next pages related to some changes in the sales and use tax area. Just number 25 is related to the application of sales tax for digital downloads. Currently, Minnesota is out of compliance with the Streamline sales tax agreement, which again is something that we're recommending that Minnesota remain in conformance with. And this provision would exempt, we're out of compliance because ringtones are something that we tax, and there are other digital downloads that we do not tax. The governor recommends exempting ringtones from sales taxation in order to come into compliance with Streamline sales tax. With that, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, sorry, and members, my apologies, I'll turn it over to...
It's really important that people have free ringtones.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Margaret Reister. And the next proposal is simply a statutory change to ensure that that satellite and cable providers are treated the same. Currently, the way the statutes read, if a consumer or purchaser in Minnesota purchases their media through a cable provider, the programmable services are taxable. However, the satellite customer would not. And so we've merely made a change to make those two statutory provisions consistent.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Susan Berry from Revenue, and Margaret and I will be going back and forth here.
Thank you. Welcome to you both to the committee. Thank you for being here.
On page 27, then, is the online lodging reservations. And the governor is proposing a statutory change to confirm the original intent of the sales tax on lodging and relating services, that the tax applies to the full price, all of the charges that are paid by the consumer who is purchasing lodging. So it includes any of the fees for facilitating reservations or similar services that are part of the transaction. So currently, hotel intermediaries are not charging tax on this additional fee, so that consumers are paying less tax if they reserve a room through an intermediary than if they go to the hotel itself. And so under this change, it would clarify that in both situations, the tax is on the sales price, which is all the charges.
The next provision has to do with the,
Ms. Restor, Senator
Senjum. Madam Chair, I think I know the answer, but would this have any effect on a local lodging tax? It would not, would it?
No,
Ms. Berry.
No, Madam Chair, Senator, this is just the sales tax.
Mr. Mossman, Ms. Berry, and Ms. Resdorf, it would help the members if going forward you would prepare a comparison for us of what states have adopted these sales tax changes and which ones haven't. I know that they're part of the Streamline, but not every state is Streamlined, and we want to see where Minnesota falls as to whether this is we would be competitive or anti-competitive with our neighbors in other states. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, does this provision face any regulatory challenges or legal challenges based on, you know, like internet sales tax? Same thing with sales tax. If you don't have a physical presence in the state, it's sales tax exempt or it doesn't have to be collected. I'm just wondering, you know, are there going to be entities that are going to challenge us? Is this going to lead us into some sort of a legal battle with some of these online?
Senator Howell, that was a great question. Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, it's certainly possible the state can get sued on probably any tax provision. So in terms of this, the last part of your question, it's unpredictable in that regard. I think that there are challenges with this provision is we believe that we have crafted language that works. And that's, you know, we'll see when we're able to provide you with the language, we'll be able to have more of a discussion on that. I understand, you know, I hear the question that you're asking, and we can, we'll have more conversation with that as we move forward.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I would just ask that, you know, we be abreast of the, you know, in this particular statute, I guess, or provision, what our legal basis would be, you know, why we would think we would be successful in defending that.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator
Howe. Absolutely.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mosman, you might want to just give an update of the Amazon case in New York when you are dealing with that in terms of the nexus issues, too.
Senator Rest, as I said, we are going to have a hearing on that, and so maybe you all could just prepare information about all of these provisions for that hearing, plus the comparison for other states, so members get a full understanding of the issue. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, the next provision deals with admissions, and this provision, you know, under current law, Minnesota taxes admissions to places of amusement, athletic events, recreational areas, et cetera. This amendment really just provides greater specificity and detail to that provision. Under current law, our statutes could be interpreted to allow for the imposition of sales tax already, but we've just provided greater detail for ease of administration.
A question about that, Ms. Resdorf. There are nonprofits, though, that hold events, and they would still be sales tax exempt. So what you're saying is we're going to apply the sales tax to any privately managed event, but not to a nonprofit managed event, correct?
Yep. Correct. This provision does not amend the exemption statutes.
All right. Thank you.
The next provision deals with providing parallel taxation for computer software. Currently, computer software is taxed if it's received in tangible form or downloaded. But the current technology of computer software is that software can be hosted remotely. So this provision or this change simply treats all computer software the same and expands the sales tax to also apply to purchases where the seller or a third party would maintain the software for use for the purchaser.
The next provision on page 30.
Ms. Berry. I'm sorry, I just have for the record to make sure that we know who's speaking. So
yes, Susan Berry. Page 30, then, the sourcing rule for floor sales. And this is a change regarding sourcing for the telefloral sales, the wiring over the internet, et cetera, for floral sales. Under our statute and under the streamlined sales tax agreement, for the most part, the sourcing of the sales, that is as far as determining which taxing jurisdiction is going to get the tax, it's destination-based. With floral sales, however, it's a little bit different in that we have a rule, currently a sales tax regulation, that provides that for telefloral sales, it's origin-based. And so we have a statute that says destination-based and a regulation that says that it's origin-based. And so we had considered, well, maybe we need to repeal the rule. But streamlined sales tax has a special provision saying that the states may tax the telefloral sales as they wish. And so all of the other member states of the streamlined sales and use tax agreement have chosen to use origin-based sourcing for telefloral orders. And so this would be consistent with that practice and also with our Minnesota rule by making the telefloral or sales origin-based.
Thank you. Senator Howe, do you have a bill on that is similar to this with the automobile supplies, moving it from the taxation on the sales tax from wholesale to retail? Do you have that bill?
Yes, but it's slightly different. Madam Chair, it deals with the body shops paying sales tax from the supplier and then and changing that where they would actually collect the sales tax from the consumer when they when they give the when the consumer pays the auto body shop for the work that's done. So it's just instead of collecting it from the supplier to the auto body, it just moves it to where it should be at the at the point where the consumer, just kind of like where the retail sales tax. But the question I have on here is, so if it's when you go to origin base, you're talking about where the person takes the order, or are you talking about where the flowers are delivered to?
Ms. Berry.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, origin base means where it originates. So if I order it from someone who is located in St. Paul, even though they're delivering it to Wisconsin, we would get the tax here, and St. Paul would get the tax as well. So it's origin-based.
Okay.
Based on the origin of the sale.
So it's the
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, so if you're calling a 1-800 number and the call center is based in California, and the florist here belongs to that association, and the order's dialed in at 800 number, the call center is somewhere, is the tax collected at that call center then?
Ms. Berry.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, in that case, if the person originating, the florist who originates it, if they're here in Minnesota, then it would be, the sale would be here. If you're doing it over the internet, then it would be based where the internet, you know, wherever that provider is, it's coming from them. That'd be the origin.
Perfectly clear, right, Senator Howe?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, would there even be a tax collected if it was on the internet?
Ms. Berry.
That's what they're, that's the kind of thing they're trying to get out of here.
Okay.
We may have to get back to you on that, Senator Howe. Mr. Mossman?
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, the one thing, and this isn't intended to be an answer to your question, but we do think that you'll notice that on the budget part, the numbers part of the page at the top, that there will be a what we're anticipating to be a netting out of
sure.
this activity, and that actually, as I have understood it, this provision that we that there's actually we're actually becoming under streamlined sales tax. Florists have been able to make an option, and we're actually going to end up being probably more consistent in the florist industry to where other the way most other people are implementing the collection of sales tax on flowers now with this provision. But that's the intent.
I can leave.
Madam Chair, just
Senator
follow up. I'd just like clarification, you know, based on the internet sales, call centers, and exactly a little better clarification on how that would work. I know it's not a big part of our budget, but it relates to how the internet works, and it'd be helpful.
And members, we are going to have more hearings on this. Senator Bach, I know your hand flew up when we talked about that suppliers, the auto body, because I know we passed it out of the Senate last year. And Senator Howe has it this year. We are going to have hearings on sales taxes, and I think that's one that's a logical one to add to this group.
But
Senator Bach.
Senator Howe explained it pretty well, but I guess the easiest way maybe to understand this change is let's use there's a lot of people from Duluth that are on the Capitol the last couple days. Let's use a Duluth Superior example, I guess. If I'm from Duluth and I want to send some flowers and I call the florist in Wisconsin, are there situations where that sales tax is not paid currently? Even though I'm a Duluth resident ordering flowers across the Blatnik Bridge in Wisconsin, how does that florist in Wisconsin treat the collection of Minnesota sales tax if it's a Minnesota customer that makes the purchase?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, currently the florists have an option to either do destination-based or origin-based, so it's hard to say for any particular florist how that would work. Certainly if if I call someone in Wisconsin and they're going to deliver it to my house in Minnesota, right now, if they're delivering it to me, it's going to be destination based, and that's going to be true under the post regulation as well. But if I'm calling Wisconsin, someone in Wisconsin, and they are actually then calling someone in California to deliver it there, then it's going to be sourced to Wisconsin, not Minnesota.
Even though I'm a Minnesota customer that's making the purchase. Thank you.
Senator Howell.
Mr. Chair, just clarifying, most retail sales or delivered sales are destination-based. And, you know, having a number of Sears stores, you know, if we delivered to Iowa and it was a delivered product, it was charged Iowa sales tax, even though it was collected in Minnesota. If it was to Wisconsin, we collected Wisconsin. If it was to a tribal community, it was tax-exempt. So it was all destination-based based on the point of delivery. And that's what most retail sales are. So that, and then when you go to the internet, if you buy something on the internet and the person doesn't have a physical presence, a brick and mortar presence in Minnesota, then it's non-taxable or doesn't have to have tax collected. So I think that's an issue too, because you've got billions of dollars being bought on the internet. And you know, and I'll just take this opportunity to share with you, when I'd have a customer come down and say, geez, I can buy this on the internet for a less price. Well, we had no problem matching the price. I mean, everybody has a price match guarantee, and let's say if it's a $1,000 camera, I can match the price on that. But I cannot get away from paying the $68 of sales tax. Or I should say collecting that money. And that became the issue, is because it was the same exact product. And so why not just buy it over the internet? Mm-hmm. And so the destination, origin source, you know, it, and with the way our society is going, I mean, you can order anything right over your smartphone. So the way our society is going, we have to look at ways that it does make sense. But I agree that we need to do what most people are doing. But it is just it gets a tad bit confusing when you're talking about call centers, internet-based, and picking up the phone and making a phone call on it. So I just wanted to make that point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Howell. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howell, I think what would be helpful is maybe for this proposal we'll put together just a set of examples as to what circumstances could exist in the industry and what the taxation would be currently and under the proposal, and provide that for you.
Okay. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mossman, it might also be helpful when we get into the other stuff of the sales tax and the congressional prohibitions and the Supreme Court cases that have come down, and also maybe just a brief description of the Main Street Fairness Act that currently is still stymied in Congress, and also just what kind of the congressional prescriptions are about when states are going to be allowed to move toward the sales tax on internet sales. And part of that, of course, as you know, is dependent on how many states adopt Streamline.
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. I think that concludes and moves us on to page 31, which is we have one provision that relates to the estate tax to walk through. The governor recommends that real and tangible personal property that is located in Minnesota, but if this property is held by a non-resident decedent and it's held in a pass-through entity such as a partnership or an S corporation, under current law, and this is only affecting non-residents at this point. Under current law, that tangible personal property can pass to the decedent's heirs through the pass-through entity, and that tangible property is treated instead as intangible property and is not part of the calculation for the Minnesota estate tax, and this change would make that be part of the estate tax calculation. Mr. Chair and members, on page 32 is a provision, the intent of which is to, this only affects the Highway User Distribution and Transit Fund, the intent of which is to bring about a situation that we think is the intent of the legislature and policymakers, that the purchase of emergency response vehicles by ambulance services be exempt from the motor vehicle sales tax, and that the lease of this type of vehicle also be exempt from the sales and use tax. It would have a modest impact on those two non-general funds.
Mr. Mossman? Question I had is this involving nonprofit or for-profit ambulance services? Are they treated the same?
Mr. Chair, I'll let Ms. Berry correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that it would apply to profit or nonprofit scenarios.
Any branches? Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, that brings us to page 33. The governor recommends implementing a statewide tax on residential single-unit properties valued over $1 million. The tax would be levied by the state on the incremental value over $1 million, such that if a residential property was valued at $1.1 million, the tax would apply to $100,000 of value, that $100,000 that is over $1 million. We expect that this proposal would generate increased revenues collected by the general fund by $80.3 million in fiscal 12 and 13. That is net of offsets that would be included in the provision. There would be some income tax interaction with deductibility of the property tax on the income tax form. In addition, you'll see at the bottom of page 33, because residential properties in the state that are seasonal recreational properties would already be subject to the seasonal rec statewide levy, there would be an adjustment made in that levy such that a seasonal recreational property valued at over $1 million would not be subject to both statewide levies, and instead the seasonal recreational levy would apply to value up to $1 million. This levy would apply to values over $1 million for residential properties.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Mossman. And that is strictly, based on what value? Just plain market value or taxable value?
Mr. Mossman.
Tax capacity value? What's the value?
Madam, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, it would apply to the market value. It would be the taxable market value, and it would be about 1% of that value of the value over $1 million.
I understand the applying it, but it would be the base is market value. Period.
The base is market value.
Not adjusted for anything.
That's
referendum market value, not that, just plain market value.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, when I read this, I see the recommendation, I see the rationale. I'm just wondering, has there been any thought given to what this does to the market forces? I mean, what does this do to the value of these homes in this category? My guess is that it's going to reduce the actual value, and it's going to hurt the market in those areas. And you're going to have I'm just wondering, I know we don't do dynamic scoring here, but there should be some thought to, if the taxes on these homes go up, there's going to be less of an appetite or less of a market to buy these homes, and therefore the price of these homes are going to come down. So I'm just wondering, you know, if we get, again, caught to that tipping point where we institute something like this, and then now you see those values of those homes come down, and, you know, you're projecting, you know, quite a revenue increase here, and you may not get that revenue increase. And in fact, you may have a, instead of an increase in revenue, you may, in fact, have a decrease because the overall value of the home and the tax that's being assessed to that overall value is going to go down. And so, you know, I'm just wondering what thought was given to that about the market impact of this this particular proposal, or if there was any market summary done on this proposal.
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, in terms of the basis for the recommendation overall, I think on a higher level, the governor's recommendation here reflects his overall interest in making the tax system as a whole, income sales, the overall state and local tax system more progressive. That is, I think, the basis. And to your question, we haven't done, and I understand the economic analysis you're asking for, and certainly people who purchase homes, part of the calculation among many things is, you know, the tax treatment of the home as well as, you know, their interest in having a home of a certain type. We don't have really a model or an approach, I don't think, to do that sort of dynamic computation or analysis that you're asking for.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I just think that, you know, those are the kind of things we need to think about when we're talking about a proposal like this. It's not just that, boy, it looks like, you know, especially in a depressed market the way we are right now. I'd like to see numbers on sales of these type of properties in our state. I wouldn't think that they're very strong right now. And I don't think this is going to help that those market conditions, you know, because when they sell, there's commissions paid to brokers, and it's just going to make these properties much more less saleable. And I really think, given the economic conditions and given the housing market the way it is, I can't see that this is a proposal that is going to help matters any. You know, no matter where you peg the number at, it's just not going to help the situation out. So I know that's more of a commentary, but I would think that we should be looking in the future of how this is going to help or predict the market. It's not just as easy as, geez, here's some additional funds. We can raise, you know, $27 million by doing this. It's going to have an impact, and it's going to change behavior. And it's not only going to change behavior, it's going to affect the assessed value of those homes. And the net, I'm just suggesting the net result isn't going to be just a flat line. It's just not going to be, here's the values today and here's how much we're going to get. Those values are going to come down with this proposal. And that's not taken in consideration here.
Senator West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe it's just anecdotal, but it's my understanding, I think Senator Skoy, that the houses that are $1 million are doing quite well in sales. The wealthy don't seem to have much of a problem in either buying or selling their homes. It's the homes that are in the $150,000 to $250,000 range, first-time home buyers and so on, that are having the difficulty. Also, this obviously, when people are doing calculations, whether it's an economic analysis, a dynamic one or not, they're going to take into account this additional $27 million, which they can deduct on their individual income tax. These folks are itemizers. They're not filing 1040EZ here, so they're. The imposition of the tax is not necessarily without a tax benefit, even though they perhaps would prefer to have that tax benefit in some other manner. But it's not without a tax benefit. I'm assuming that the revenues do not take into account taxpayer behavior with regard to whether they deduct this additional property tax on their federal and state income tax returns. Is that correct?
Mr. Mossman?
Madam Chair, Senator Rust, that's correct. I mean, the numbers on the budget page here reflect the state general fund implications for the proposed property tax. There would be deductibility on state and federal taxes after that. That's not reflected here. That's not a state. That's not a state cost, obviously. So that's not calculated in here. Just one quick point, and Senator Howe, I know that this still does, that this isn't really, you know, the question you're asking. I understand the question you're asking. One just technical point in terms of how the proposal would work in terms of whether or not the revenues that are being recommended here by the governor would be achieved. The proposal here is to actually set a levy. So that levy amount would be set in statute. So the amount would be achieved. I mean, the amount would be realized. The question would be, who would it be realized from, just in terms of how the proposal is intended to work.
Senator Skoy, and then Senator Howe on that point?
Yes.
Senator Howe, and we'll get back to you, Senator.
Madam Chair, if that's the case, then your numbers of how it's going to affect people is going to, like you just said, is going to change. But the point was made earlier that sales are doing good in these areas. I'd like to see – that's exactly why I'd like to see the numbers, because from what I can see, the homes that are listed for $1.4 million, $1.5 million are selling for the sub-$1 million price. So, I mean, I you know, when you get into those categories of homes, it's much like commercial property. You've seen significant reductions, and I think to somewhere I think maybe it was in Senator Michelle's committee on job and economic growth, we had the Wells Fargo economists, and they're predicting a continued decline of home prices and a continued decline of commercial properties. And I just don't think this proposal is going to help that situation out any.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mossman, if you could help me understand what you're doing with regard to the seasonal rec properties. Currently, the residential and the non-residential houses are subject to the voter-approved referendum, but not to the statewide business tax. But the seasonal rec houses would be subject to the statewide business tax. So what are you doing here with regard to these seasonal rec properties that are high-valued homes that's different than the residential or the non-residential houses are?
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, if you have a high-valued seasonal recreational property, so that property is valued over $1 million, the value over $1 million for that seasonal recreational property would be subject to this tax. But because that value over $1 million, as well as the value under $1 million, is already subject to the seasonal recreational statewide levy, what the proposal here would do would be to make an adjustment to the levy amount that's set in statute for the seasonal recreational category, so that that levy amount is reduced in effect and only spread on the value under $1 million for seasonal recreational property. And then this proposed recommendation here would apply to values over $1 million for residential properties, seasonal rec, and other properties, so that the intent would be to hold seasonal recreational properties harmless statewide in effect, and then just bring in the value over $1 million to this tax here.
Senator Rust.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy to that point, and then Senator Rust. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, maybe Senator Rust is going to ask the same question. So the seasonal rec portion of the statewide business tax is going to stay the same as it is prior to the imposition of this, or what's happening to that number then?
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, if you look at the bottom of page 33, you see some numbers there on the reduction in the existing statewide property tax on seasonal recreational property. These are the amounts by which the budget amounts, the levy amounts would be potentially just slightly different just in terms of the timing issues here, but these would be the amounts an effect by which we believe you would have to reduce collections from the statewide levy on seasonal recreational property in order to prevent the value over $1 million from being taxed by both the seasonal rec levy and this levy.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Mossman, it appears to me, and maybe I'll talk to you later about this, but it appears to me that you're going to be doing some shifting within the seasonal rec category of the statewide business tax. And so as a category, they won't be paying this additional, residential tax, I guess, whereas the homes or the residential or the non-residential homes will be paying it. I think there's something going on there that doesn't look quite right to me.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Scully, we will take a look at it and have more conversations. That's certainly not the intent. The intent here would be that if you have a seasonal recreational property of $200,000, for example, that's the value, that all else being equal, that the statewide levy falling on that property would be unchanged by this proposal.
Senator, and
I should just say, within the context, obviously, of there are the natural shifts that would occur with this levy or not.
Yeah. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Mossman. Would you just review the way in which the statewide tax operates what the formulas are that go into that for both business property and seasonal rec?
Mr. Mossman.
There's been, you know, discussions back and forth about whether it should be an amount or whether it's a percentage or whatever. Would you just review briefly how that's calculated and whether the two classes of property are kept separate into separate categories, that there's no shifting back and forth between categories, or would that happen here?
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, I'll do the best I can, and then it may well be that some other staff in the room, or I can get additional staff as well to support, will be able to give you more detail. But in general, under current law, there's a statewide property tax on business property and a statewide property tax on seasonal recreational property.
And they're separate.
And those levies are separate, and they are separate in statute, and they are a levy amount, not a tax rate amount. So the levy grows annually by the IPD, the implicit price deflator, and that levy then is used, the department annually certifies a rate based on what we know about the value in the state that is subject in those two separate categories, determines a rate, and that rate then is used to allocate the levy across the state and collect the tax. The proposal here would be to follow that same model for this recommendation here.
Thank you, Mr. Mossman.
I think that's helpful to members.
Very briefly, member Senator Pogemiller has asked our page to hand out information to the members, and it didn't identify its source, so I just wanted to make sure folks know that this comes from Senator Pogemiller. And it doesn't say any sources for the information, Senator Pogemiller, before we close today.
I was going to just mention it before we left today. I was waiting until we were kind of done, and then I was going to mention it.
All right. Since it was being handed out, Senator Pogemiller, I just wanted folks to know where it was coming from. Senator Bach and Senator Limmer.
Mr. Mossman, I'm a little confused why we're making it so complicated. I mean, I think the governor's intent is to try and get the same net effective tax rate for all taxpayers. And it's very hard to do that with just an income tax. So he's looking at the property tax as one of the pieces of the net effective tax rate that he needs to have part of the equation to get the net effective tax rate the same. But I do believe and somebody from the department can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe we changed the state general tax so that the seasonal rec portion of the $750 million or whatever that number is 5% of the total. So whatever we
the state general tax number, which was, I think, $546 million in 2001 when we enacted it, with the current inflation in law is now $750 million or something like that. We after it was originally enacted, we actually changed the law to say, of the total we're going to collect in the state general tax, 5% of it is going to get collected from seasonal recreational property, and then it gets distributed out. But, Mr. Mossman, if the intent is to hold them harmless as it relates to their contribution to the general fund, and I think that's what I heard, it seems like rather than go through this whole convoluted process, why don't we just raise the class rate? If we're just trying to increase their property tax burden that figures into the net effective tax rate, it seems like if we're only going to spread the property tax portion locally anyway, why don't we just raise the class rate? It seems this is going to take pages and pages and pages in statute to articulate. Or am I not right that we're holding those property owners revenue neutral as it relates to their contribution to the state general fund?
Senator Bach, that was going to be my point, is the administrative costs and the complexity of this are it's just striking. I mean, there's no way you can do this without there being a huge amount of added cost on top of whatever revenues might be received, in addition to the fact that you might have diminishing returns because people will behave to avoid the tax treatment.
Well, and Madam Chair, you know, frankly, I think it's probably pretty good policy to increase the class rate on those very expensive cabins or homes. When I came here originally to the House, I think the class rate on cabins was about 2.5. You know, and previously Senator Rest said maybe it was 3. Today it's 1.25. I mean, I think we've made some decisions in the past that are causing an awful lot of shifting and moving the burdens around, and it's been leading to what's been happening to that bar and the net effective tax rate. So, I mean, I think I don't think it wouldn't have to be as complicated. That maybe simply taking a look at class rates as property values go up is probably much simpler and probably much easier for the taxpayer to understand.
All right. Thank you, Senator Bach. Senator Limmer, quickly, and we are going to have to wrap things up here pretty quickly. So, Senator Limmer, you get the last word on the property tax proposal here.
Madam Chair, I know we don't have a lot of time to discuss this. My comments will be brief. We continue to go back. It's kind of like going back to the future in a way on this proposal. First, we're assuming that owners of extremely high-value homes typically have the greatest ability to pay. Now, that isn't always true, and we had that discussion for many years over property taxes on how to modify and reform property taxes on residential homes. So we're now going back to the very same premise that we kind of rejected in the past. Second, the new state property tax levy. Now, this is a tax levy, any value over $1 million, that excess tax will now go not to local governments, but will go to the state. So now we're using residential homeowners as a source for state revenue. Is that correct, Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Mossman?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, that would be correct, yes.
And then, Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer,
we're basically creating another third tier, again, another trip back to the future where we had a third tier on property taxes on residential homes, and now we're reestablishing it, although it's a little higher. And one of the things to remember is if someone's in this type of bracket of home, I'm assuming a great number of them who are homeowners are also business owners. They're taking their risk in Minnesota to create a business and make a profit. We're already going to tax them even more under this large proposal, but now their businesses aren't enough. Now we're going to go after their home values and make that a revenue source for the state, not even local government, for schools and counties and parks, but we're going to pour it back into the state. Is that correct?
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I know that the Voss data work that's done would be able to give us some sense, not exactly, but some sense of incomes related to owners of properties like this, but we would not be able to determine how many are business owners or how, you know, what the nature of the of the work is of the owners.
And Madam Chair, one last comment. The last comment I have is that we have a downward trending real estate market. I don't think it's going to continue and rise real fast. We don't have a replacement population to buy homes from existing owners now, and now we're taxing a devaluing market and hitting it even harder. I think it'll just continue to force it to slide even more.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. To you, Mr. Mossman, Ms. Berry, and Ms. Resdorf, thank you so much for being here today. I know members are going to have additional questions, and we may call to invite you back to continue the conversation. And to members, let me just tell you what's on the agenda for Tuesday, because I think we can continue this conversation on Tuesday, and we can actually discuss the handouts. We'll give everybody 30 seconds on their handouts. I'm one of them. But let me just say the agenda for Tuesday. We'll hear Senate File 28, Senator Rest's bill on levy limits. I'll have a very small provision, Senate File 217, on licensed ambulance services. And that may be a great opportunity for us to continue a conversation about the policy elements of what the governor is proposing. Senator Pogue-Miller, if you want to briefly
tell
folks what you've handed out.
This is just a follow-up to our conversation yesterday with Senator Daley. And this data is pulled off the various MMB websites and stuff, and I had Ms. Von Mosch look at it, so I think it's fairly accurate. And this just says under our current tax structure, our revenue is going to go from 30.5 to 32.4. And if you kept, even if you freeze spending at the actual 10-11 level, which is 34.4, you need $2 billion to, even if you freeze spending. The projected expenditures based on the November forecast is $39 billion. So that's a big difference there. And even Governor Dayton is recommending less than the projected. So this is a tough nut here to crack.
Thank you, Senator. I'm sure we can talk more about that on Tuesday. We'll have some time for that. Senator, how do you want to explain your handout?
Yeah, I've got just a quick handout, real quick handout, Madam Chair. This is a per capita deficit for all for the states based on 2010 estimates. And, Minnesota has the seventh highest per capita deficit in the nation, based on the 2010 estimates. You've got four states, look like energy states, Wyoming, North Dakota, Montana, and Alaska, that aren't projecting deficits. But it's interesting to note, one of the ones that are close to us is Illinois at $543 per capita deficit. Minnesota's at $613. And Illinois, what they've done is they've raised their income tax, their state income tax, from 3% to 5%, which is just about a 66% across the board tax increase. And I know we're just looking at one little piece, but my suggestion for us to think about is they're still significantly lower on state income tax, even at their new rate, which is a 66% increase. So that should suggest to us that we're out of balance, and we have to be in balance with our neighboring states. We have to be competitive, and I know there's a lot of little things, that there's a lot of moving pieces to the puzzle, but it's just an example of here they're having a 66% increase across the board on state income tax, and they're still significantly lower than Minnesota state income tax. So we are out of balance, and there's other factors. There's other ways to drive revenue. There's other ways to increase our economy, and we just need to be looking at this. But we have to pay attention to what's going around in neighboring states.
Thank you, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair.
I also asked the committee page – 1 second, Senator Rest. I asked the committee page to hand out the state revenue report from the Rockefeller Institute. And I know we're having the explosion of handouts here at the last minute, but I wanted to point out the second and third charts that show – the volatile nature of our income taxes and the fact that we're relying on income taxes here to pull us out of an economic recession is maybe misguided. It is the most volatile. It's the one that fell off during the recession. The sales tax is not as volatile, but clearly volatile. And then you've got the property tax, which is more stable than all. So just wanted to point that out for tax policy. Now, Senator Rest.
Yeah, I would just make a request to anybody that has a handout to – including yourself, Madam Chair, even though your source is quite clear, to put your name on it and then, Senator Howe, where did this information come from? And if you could just write it on there, then that makes it you know, much more reliable for the rest of us rather than a blank sheet of paper that doesn't have any information on it but a bunch of numbers.
Senator Rust, I couldn't agree more. And then I want to invite members all to bring their handouts, and we can have it because it kind of feels like show and tell. If anybody has one for Tuesday, I invite you to bring it, and we'll
Madam
talk
Chair,
about your favorite handout.
I'm perfectly willing to do this, but when I did this at Senator about 10 Pogan. O'clock last night using official documents of the state, I just didn't think to put my name on it. But I take full credit. I think it's factual, and it's simple to understand.
And Madam Chair, Senator Russ,
Senator
I'll get you the source of that data.
You should have it for all of us, Senator.
Senator Russ, it's a very good point. I couldn't agree more. Members, we are adjourned.